Hey, are we live? It says we're live, but I don't see us on the screen. Hold on a second. Let me try this again. Are we going? I think we're going. We might be going. Are we? Oh, yeah. We're here. We're live. Guys in Live Chat Stream Live. Hey, everybody. Welcome to our coverage of CinemaCon. What are you doing?
I'm getting ready. That's my eating face.
Of CinemaCon 2024. We're here in Las Vegas in Caesar's Palace. I'm, of course, joined by Ray Ora. My better half, Ann Campia, is here.
Hello.
And, wait, oh, what?
Before you start.
All right.
Me and Ann went on an adventure earlier. Mm. CinemaCon is not just about presentations, we found out, right, Ann?
Yes.
We found out there's a secret magical place. The trade show room floor, where we had an abundance of snacks and treats. Me and Ann are talking about going into the concession business.
Yeah.
Because if you go to CinemaCon, the one thing you can't pass up is the trade show room floor. We have so many snacks. We're backed up. We're out the room with Skittles and M&Ms. We ready. We ready to talk about this Warner Brothers presentation, baby.
You're shaking the table.
Sorry.
I kid you not. Ray's bed is over there. And like just scattered across his bed is open candy bags. That's and he woke up this morning and goes, look, guys. Like he's literally, he hadn't lifted his head off the pillow. He goes, see, this is the greatness of this. I can just reach over
yeah.
and pull out this pretzel and eat it right now. Yeah.
I had no idea how so many bags were open on my bed, but it happened and it's glorious.
By the way, hello to everybody joining us. There's like over a thousand people already watching the live stream. Hello to everybody out there. Gilbert and Callow and Adrian and Patrick and Tyler and Xavier and all of you guys in the live chat. Thanks for joining us. So today we're here to talk about what we just walked out of, which is the Warner Brothers panel. Do you have your phone?
I do.
Open up the video you just shot.
Oh.
So we were walking back from the Coliseum Theater where they Warner Brothers did their presentation. And can I hit it?
Yes, press play.
So, yeah. And we're walking by. Oh, there's Chris Hemsworth. We just walked right by Chris Hemsworth as we were coming up. He's staying in the hotel. He was heading the same direction.
He looked so upset because I sped past him. Because I said, hey, man, when good-looking people look at each other, we don't need to pause. We just accept each other's good looking.
I think he was mad that you didn't stop to say hello. I think that's why.
I zoomed past him. I didn't even see him.
Ray Ora's here. Didn't even stop to say hello to everybody. Okay, so let's talk about the Warner Brothers. By the way, we're going to talk about the Warner Brothers panel, and then we're going to take some of your comments and questions. If you have questions, go ahead and use the Super Chat feature to send those in if you'd like, and we'll address those later. Now, once we get done talking about the presentation, Ray and Ann are going to split because they're going to get down to the after party. But I'm going to stay here and answer your questions. So that's what we're going to do here. So let's get things started. All right. They started off with a couple of the distribution executives coming out as they do every year. They were dressed as Beetlejuice, which is pretty funny. They introduced it all. Then the co-chairmen, Pam Abdi, and what's the other guy's name?
Mike? I don't know.
Guy who thinks he's a comedian.
Yeah.
But Pam Abdi and the other guy who's her co-chair of Warner Brothers Pictures came out and they talked about all this stuff. So here's the movies they talked about. They talked about, we're going to go over this, Furiosa, The Watchers, Superman, the Christopher Reeve story, the Kevin Costner Horizon films, M. Night's Daughter's film, Trap, no, Mickey 17.
No, no.
Yeah. Trap, The Watchers is M. Night's Daughter's film. Trap is M. Night's new film.
Correct.
Beetlejuice, and finally The Joker. So let's start things off with Furiosa. So they brought out George Miller, Anya Taylor-Joy, and Chris Hemsworth to talk about film. And do you have that picture? Taylor's picture?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so we've also, Taylor is here. You guys remember from, he used to be on the show, my former assistant. We were hanging out with him a bit. And he got a picture. He was walking around the CinemaCon floor. And he just happened to
bump. What the heck? He got that close to her?
Yep, he got this picture with Anya Taylor-Joy.
He said she shocked his shoulder as they were.
Oh,
the electricity.
Oh.
Bang. So,
I wonder what would happen if we took a picture.
Taylor got thunder. Taylor got a picture with Anya, which is good for him. So they talked about it. So the legend himself, George Miller, comes out on stage, Anya Taylor-Joy, who looked stunning.
Of course.
Chris Hemsworth comes out, who looked stunning. and they talked about the film. So they showed us, instead of like a 10-minute scene from the movie, they basically showed us like a 10-minute trailer. Because it was like a piecing
like
together.
Like a sizzle reel.
Like a 10-minute sizzle reel of Furiosa. It looks amazing. It looks so good. And I didn't know what Chris Hemsworth's character's name was. And it's...
Dementis.
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 Is the name of Chris Hemsworth's character, which is like so perfect. And the footage looked intense. They talked a lot about like... Anya Taylor-Joy was talking about like a lot of directors, they have second and third unit directors. But George Miller, he was in total control of all three units that were shooting. She said like every single frame you see in the movie is like George Miller painted it. And she just talked about how great it was to work with him. Mm. Chris Hemsworth talked about how like being Australian, he said in his house, George Miller was basically a religion to him and to Chris Hemsworth and his dad. And he said, so to work with George Miller on this was amazing. And I thought it looked fantastic. Yeah. What did you think about the
look? Well, I think the thing that they showed us, it gave us a roadmap of the whole story, like of what the beginning and end. I think that's what the most important part of that sizzle reel was. It shows you where we're going in this upcoming movie. And it didn't spoil anything.
No.
It just gave us a clear indication of how he went upon this movie, which is great. I mean, he says... Fury Road was a matter of what, 3 days of like the story wise?
Yeah. So the story Fury Road takes place over 3 days.
And this one is like, he said 12 to 16 years
yeah.
of Furiosa's life. I'm more interested in this movie than I was before. I can't wait.
And one of the cool things they did was in this 10-minute sizzle trailer, they showed us bits from each of the three acts of the movie. So it said like, chapter one, this, and yes. then they showed us like three yes. or 4 minutes. Chapter two, this, and then 3 or 4 minutes of stuff, and then chapter three, this. And yet it didn't really spoil anything. So, I mean, what did you think of the Furiosa?
Yeah, I think you get more motivation from this cut of whatever we just saw.
Yeah.
That you don't see in the trailer or trailers that are out right now is why is she doing the things that she's doing? And I think you get a lot of insight into the overarching story, which often can't be told in like a 2-minute trailer. So I thought it was beautiful. And one of the things that wasn't mentioned, but I remember about Mad Max was the sound.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Let's not forget how intense the sound is in his movies. And I'm just looking forward to that, too.
And they got the Caesars Forum Theater. They've got like a giant Dolby Atmos projector and sound system in there. So as like we're watching this footage, the rumbling and the bass and the crashes and the music, and it just sounded amazing. So yeah, like listen, I've been looking forward to Furiosa. I am now excited about Furiosa. I can't wait to see it. All right, so that was Furiosa. Next up was a little M. Night movie, but it's not M. Night Shyamalan. It's his daughter Ishara?
Ishara.
I want to say beautiful Ishara. Man.
Yeah.
Beautiful girl, too. Ishara M. Shyamalan, directing The Watchers. I know very little about this movie, and they showed us the first trailer for it. And I don't know if they've released it publicly yet or not. Take a look if you can. I'm on board. This look creepy and whatever. I don't know. Right?
I'm very excited for this movie. The problem with the trailers
lean in a little bit. Yeah.
The problem with the trailers is even this new one, I don't get what's totally happening.
Well, you shouldn't with the first trailer.
Yeah.
You shouldn't with the first trailer.
Right. So I'm going to wait a little bit more, but I am excited only because of the posters that we've seen, the little taglines they have on the poster. I'm very interested in seeing this movie, but I need to see more. I don't know what's going on. But maybe that's what the movie is about. Maybe you don't know until you see it. Who knows?
It feels like she was clearly raised by her dad. It feels like an M. Night Shyamalan movie. But she came out like she's... Anne leaned over, too. She's like, why is M. Night's sister so hot? It's like, that's his daughter.
And then they later on, when they bring her dad out, they talk about how the whole family is like the Von Trapp family because they're all just multi-talented. Yeah,
what they call them, the Indian Van Trapp family or something like that? I thought that was pretty
funny. But this movie is based on a book,
Right. She got a novel and really thought it looked sounded great, and it takes place in Ireland, I guess.
Yeah, she said she was
Celtic lore, and
she's been dying to do a thriller with sci-fi, and she ran into this book.
Right.
And it gave her the inspiration to do. And because she said it was perfect.
That's Elle Fanning is the lead?
Or is it Dakota?
I think it's her sister.
It's one of the Fannings.
I think.
Yeah. Guys in the live chat, who is in the watch? Is it Elle Fanning or Dakota? Somebody's saying, one person is saying, MC Mac is saying it's Dakota. But if it is, another is saying it's Elle Fanning.
It's Dakota.
It's Dakota. It's Dakota Fanning.
Yeah. Anyway, I like seeing her in either one of them, but it looks like, okay, Dakota.
So and one of my,
seeing them.
And one of the things I'm looking forward to is hearing what you guys think about it when you guys see it, or if you guys have seen it. After this week, we get off from this week and we go back to our regular shows. And we have everything that we see settle in. I want to hear what you guys think about this trailer. Because I came out more confused than excited, which is a problem, but
hey, you gotta stop hitting the table.
Oh, sorry.
The camera.
Sorry.
Anyway, but the whole idea about just driving through the woods.
It's creepy.
Everything goes out. Some strange lady says, come in here quick.
Yeah.
And
dinosaur rumblings.
And kind of the sound
what
of it.
Sounds yeah. like dinosaur rumblings, bear rumblings, that something.
Parrot or whatever is going to play a key role in this movie.
I think you're right.
Feeling.
Yep. 100%.
Whatever that's going to be, whatever it is. But they definitely focused on that being kind of a sub character too.
All right. So we had Furiosa and we had the Watchers. What was next up?
Oh,
Superman.
Oh, my
God. They have footage of James Gunn because they're still filming the movie Superman.
We got the real logo.
They actually teased us a little bit because on the big screen comes up the new Superman logo.
Oh, how beautiful it is.
Are they going to show us like even some behind the scenes stuff? They didn't. But James Gunn came on screen. He's in Atlanta talking about everything. So then his partner, Peter Safran, the other guy who's the co-chair of DC Films, comes out. And I had heard of this documentary, but I had forgotten about it, to be honest with you. They talked about how DC is releasing this documentary called Super/Man, the Christopher Reeve story. And it's all about how Christopher Reeve became Superman. And then of course his accident and how he really became a hero to a lot of people after his accident. I don't know the last time a trailer got tears in my eyes. I turned to Anne as the trailer was ending. I said, this trailer is almost making me cry. And Anne already had tears. Anne had tears coming out of her face.
Me too. It's happening right now as I think about it.
Oh my God. I honestly can't remember the last time I was this excited to see a documentary. I mean, I love documentaries, but I often fall in love with the documentary when I watch it. There's not a lot of times a documentary is coming out that I'm really excited about a documentary. I cannot wait to watch this. And I am so glad that James Gunn and Peter Safran decided to pick up this film and decided this needs to be theatrically released. Mm-hmm. And I mean, guys, wait till you see. It might be online now. If it is, go and find it. Superman, the Christopher Reeve story. It just moved me. Just the trailer moved me. And I cannot wait to see this. It just looks so special. What was it that got you crying?
Well, I...
Ugly crying.
you know the story of Christopher Reeve as Superman. And they had a little bit of footage of him playing that role and kind of day, which was great. But I think the point in the trailer that got me was when the accident happened, he didn't know... number one, he was blaming himself. He said, I ruined everybody's lives because of this. But he didn't know who would be there for him.
Yeah.
And I think there was a moment where he's in the hospital bed and the first thing that his wife does is says, I love you.
Oh, he says, I didn't think I was anything anymore. And I can't be there. I'm not the person anymore. And he says, his wife, and this got me.
Yeah, that's the
part. Why, he said his wife, and you see the footage of her in the hospital with him, and she grabs his face and she says, you are still you, and I love you. Mm-hmm. And I wanted him to fall. That was just the start of it.
Yeah.
Then his children are talking about it.
Yeah.
Like his one son talking about, we were skating and that's the last time I ever saw him on his feet again. And like his kids starting to cry. And I was like, okay. I'm like, you just tell the whole theater got really emotional.
Close relationship with Robin Williams because I guess
yeah, they were roommates together in college.
And then they go through his like humanitarian piece of it and just trying to be a real life superhero.
Yeah. By the way, everybody in the live chat is saying that they did not drop it online.
Oh, too bad.
But guys, keep your eyes out for it. I can't remember the last time I've been this excited for a documentary, Superman, the Christopher Reeve story. It moved me. It was powerful, and I cannot wait to see it.
Yeah.
All right. So we had Furiosa, The Watcher, Superman, and then
Horizon, an American Saga.
Okay.
Kevin Costner.
Yes.
They bring out Kevin Costner. He comes out on stage to talk about his new Western Frontier movies, Horizon, and I guess
Part One, Part Two.
Yeah.
Which they're doing something very interesting.
Yeah, very unique.
Part one, like I remember when Matrix 2 and 3 came out, they came out like in the same year, only six months apart. Horizon Part 1 is coming out in June.
Yep.
And Horizon Part 2 is coming out in August. Like they're coming out bang, bang, like right beside each other, which is really interesting. So Kevin Costner comes out. Everybody gives him a big round, like huge pop.
Of course.
In the theater, they talked about all his 50 films that he's made. That's made to like over $4 billion combined.
Well, he received what was the award?
The CinemaCon Icon Award.
Visionary.
So they also presented him with the CinemaCon Visionary Award, which he was really moved by. I don't think he knew he was getting it. He looked legitimately surprised.
Yeah.
And then they showed us this sizzle of both movies combined. And listen, when the first trailer for Horizon came out, I'm not going to lie. I was like, eh, like I really like Kevin Costner a lot and I like Westerns, but I just thought the first trailer was, eh, okay. I'm sure it'll be good. Cause it's Kevin Costner. This looked much, much better.
Yeah.
This looked much, much better. And he said something neat. He said, I wanted to make a movie, but not, I want it to be a movie where we go on a journey. It's not about the journey, movie. Not the plot, right? Yeah. I didn't want this one to be a plot movie. I wanted it to be a journey movie. And I thought that was really insightful because as you're watching the footage, you feel that. You feel like it's not, you know, okay, this is going to happen. So this can happen. It really is. We just meet up with this character and we just go along with him. Mm-hmm. And
he said it was about a movie about a man trying to find his place in the world. Trying to find a safe home, a place where he belongs.
You want to go grab some tissue paper?
No. I'm good. Okay. Yeah.
He's getting emotional just thinking about the Superman trailer.
it's a tough trailer. But
you had to lean in when you're talking a bit.
But this man that he's following, his name is Hayes. Hayes, right?
Yes. Yep.
Hayes, who his son is named after. It's one of those genre movies I might not be into, but I'm sure you can appreciate because of the landscape. And the history that's involved in it. There's a lot of American history in there. You could tell that's one of the big factors in it. And you know what? If someone comes up to me and tells me, you know what? You got to see this movie. It's more than what it looks like on the surface. I'll go see it. It's just not my genre. But congratulations to Kevin Costner. He deserves all. They had this big old collage of all his movies.
Pictures, yeah.
And he couldn't even fit on the screen. Like, he's been in so many movies. You got to respect the man. I do. I hope this film does well. Because he wanted to make something that people... He said, if he didn't go past a bar or go... If it didn't raise his bar, he wouldn't make it.
And it's funny. He said he originally... He came up with this movie in, like, 1998.
Yeah.
And he said he was supposed to do it in 2003, but then couldn't. And he said, so I just kept writing more of them. He said, you wrote like four of them. He goes, I wrote four more of them of the movie I never got to make. And now he's getting to make them, which is pretty interesting. So Horizon, a movie that the first trailer I didn't really like. I'm interested in seeing this movie now. I thought Costner did a really good job presenting the film. All right, what came up after Horizon?
That's
M. Night.
Okay.
I love this. Okay.
Okay.
I'll wait.
I had heard that M. Night's next movie is going to be Trap. Okay, heard that. I knew nothing about it, right? Nothing about it. M. Night obviously has a complicated history. At first, everybody jumped the gun and literally remember that the Time magazine cover, the new Spielberg. Yeah, that was a little premature. So he made some great movies, made some of the all-time worst movies, but he's been having a little bit of a comeback lately, which I'm really excited to see. And now comes this movie, Trap. And again, guys in the live chat, let me know if they dropped the trailer online or not. Just to say yes, they dropped it or they didn't. But they show us this trailer, and what's his name?
Josh Hartnett. Yes, Josh, I love seeing him.
Okay, they're saying no, they haven't dropped the trailer online yet. Okay.
Damn it.
So the basic idea is, M. Night comes out and goes, so imagine you go to a concert, because his daughter was inspired by his oldest daughter, not the one directing the Watchers. His oldest daughter is a Columbia Music signed concert pianist. And they've always talked about trying to do a something together that incorporates like a horror with music, right? So they came up with this idea. And M. Night goes, imagine you go to a concert to hear some great music, and this singer comes out on stage at CinemaCon. It's clearly the one from the movie.
Yeah.
And she just sings this quick little song that's beautiful. It goes, then the camera, the lights go back on M. Night. He goes, now imagine you're at this music concert and something very bad happens. So the trailer starts. It's this dad, Josh Hartnett, with his little girl. She was, I guess, 13 years old.
Probably.
Like, she's a teen bopper.
Yeah, teen bopper.
Still needs ride for him or her dad.
Can't go to a concert without her dad.
Yeah, right? Has to buy the tickets.
And there's a fictional biggest star in the world named Lady
Raven.
Lady Raven, right? Obviously, a made up biggest pop star in the
world. Influence from Lady Gaga, influence from Ariana Grande, one of the big stage female stars we see today that has a big show, Taylor's
Swift. Right, so they're going to the concert. The dad brought the daughter, and the daughter's like, this is the greatest thing ever. And they go into the concert hall, and everything's great. And the concert starts, and they're having a blast. And the dad goes, okay, I just got to run to the bathroom. Are you okay by yourself? And she goes, yeah, I'm fine, Dad. And so he goes out, and the dad notices that there's like hundreds of police at every door. And like they see trucks, like police trucks and everything outside. And he goes over to like a concession stand worker and goes, hey, what's going on? And the concession stand worker's like, I'm not supposed to say, but you know that serial killer,
the butcher.
You know that serial killer, the butcher? Police got a tip that he's here at this concert. And so the police are checking everything. So you're thinking, oh my God, Josh Hartnett's going to have to protect his little girl and blah, blah, blah.
And the concert was a setup.
To
draw this person
out. To draw the butcher out. So Josh Hartnett goes to the bathroom. And when he goes to the bathroom, he picks up his phone to look at a live video feed of his new victim. Because it turns out Josh Hartnett is the butcher. And he's there. And it's like, and then Josh Hartnett does this thing with his face, this little smile on his face, like, oh my God, the little girl's daddy is the butcher. And like, that's the trailer. Listen, it's been a long time since I went, I'm legit excited to see the next M. Night movie. Like, The Visit was really good. What was the one before Glass? What was it called?
The old.
No. The Glass is the sequel to... starts with an S. What's the name of the
with the beast guy?
Yeah, it's the prequel to Split. Split was obviously really good. Sorry. So he had The Visit and Split, and that was really good.
Then he did Old.
Then he did Old, which wasn't bad. Old was interesting.
I don't care what you guys say. I'll always watch every Shyamalan.
What's that?
Soul video.
Oh my soul.
I'll always watch his movies. I just appreciate sometimes how he thinks outside the box. And I do like watching his movies.
Although Glass was terrible.
Yeah.
Glass was really
bad. The Happening.
The Happening.
I love.
What's the one?
I love.
What is the one Soul loves?
The Happening.
Oh.
Because and then Lady in the Water is one of the worst things. But I'll tell you what, this movie, I think, looks great. So whenever they drop the trailer for it, definitely check it out. The movie might be terrible. Who knows? But again, it feels neat to be excited about an M. Night Shyamalan movie. So
do you think, at first I thought, oh, Should they have given away that he is the Butcher?
Or
the
did they?
Well, No, they did. They did. I think that probably happens like in the first 15 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
Right? So I don't think that's a big reveal at the end or
anything. No, I don't think so either. But it was an interesting choice to tell you right away. Because then you just wonder, I don't know. I think he's going to be multifaceted. Like, you're either going to love him or you're going to be creeped out by this character, I think.
Yeah, because it's so funny because in the first part of the trailer, he seems like such an awesome dad. Like, he's joking around with his daughter.
I think there's more layers to what he's giving us, though.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
There's more layers. There's something going to be. We're going to find out.
Which brings up the question. Because every M. Night, for good and for ill, every M. Night movie has a big twist.
Right.
Clearly, this isn't the twist, because this is probably going to be revealed in the first 15, 20 minutes of the movie.
It's the girl. It's the girl.
Actually,
the daughter is mind controlling him. Oh, my God. I don't know.
All right. So that was Trap, which looks really interesting. All right. What was next up?
Mickey 7.
Yeah.
Okay. So they say they're going to talk about Mickey 17, and they say, then they go, we have the master. Bong Joon-ho is here, and Bong Joon-ho comes out, to talk about the movie, right, with Robert Pattinson, and then Robert Pattinson comes out, and listen, I've heard about Mickey 17, but I know it's based on a book called Mickey 7.
Yes,
I didn't really know much about it. But Ray, you've read the book.
Yeah, I've read it, but I don't want to say
anything.
I don't want to say anything about it.
This way,
I don't want to say anything about it. But when this logo came up and I was like, oh my God, it's here. Like I didn't have any rumblings or anything. I didn't hear anything that they were going to show, but they showed us a trailer. And the direction's a little bit different from what I thought they were going to do, but I loved
it. Looks every so
second of it.
Funny. Like I couldn't believe how funny it looked.
Yeah, the tone was,
and I'm Robert, surprised. Robert Pattinson? Okay, look, we've talked for years. Like, once you got by the stupid idiots who only know him as Twilight Boy, right? Once you get past that and you realize he's actually one of the great actors working today.
This film's going to show that, too.
Yeah. You know he's good. But he plays multiple versions of the same character. And I hardly even recognized his voice, the way he was doing his voice and talking.
It's great.
It looks... And Steven Yeun's
Steven Yeun look good. Mark Ruffalo's
the bad guy in it. But he looks awesome.
But the director described him as the most likable dictator.
Oh, yeah.
A lovable
dictator.
Mark Ruffalo is a dictator, but he's lovable. by the way, guys in the live chat, again, let us know. Did they drop the trailer for Mickey 17?
People are saying they didn't drop anything but Joker.
Oh, I can't wait for you guys to see the trailer.
That's what I'm saying. When we get back and everything, beyond Warner Brothers, everything we see this week, eventually will probably drop. I want everyone to send in what they thought of everything they loved or hated or whatever.
But
I can't wait.
I'll tell you what, this Mickey 17 thing. Because at first I heard, it sounded a little bit like Sam Rockwell's Moon.
Right.
When the first description was, it's about this guy, but during his job is to die.
Yeah.
And then they bring
him research.
Back.
In research.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay, this sounds a little bit like Moon. This is nothing like Moon. This is nothing like Moon. It looks so good. Robert, listen, I'm going to call this early, and I know it's way premature because it's just a trailer. Mm. Way premature prediction. Robert Pattinson is going to get an Oscar nomination.
He's going to get an Oscar nomination.
Just from the 3 minutes I saw in this, I think he's going to get an Oscar nomination.
If he plays this character the way the book, he's going to get an Oscar nomination.
It's just having him on there. And then they ask Bong Joon-ho, they're like, so what was it about Robert Pattinson that made him right to play Mickey 17 and Mickey 18? And what made him right? He says, he's got crazy eyes.
It's so good.
He's got crazy eyes. It's like, all right, but sounds good.
I think the chat is right. The trailer probably won't drop for a while because it's actually coming out January of...
Yeah,
it's probably
January 2025. That was the disappointing part.
That's too bad.
But guys, You're going to love this trailer. It's so good. Yeah. I'm so excited for this movie now. And, you know, this is the guy, you know, who gave us Parasite and, you know, Snowpiercer and a whole bunch of other stuff. He's so good. And this looks great. And I can't wait to see it. Okay. So that was Mickey 17. Two left. What was next?
Beetlejuice.
All right. I can't say anything about it because I actually have to
step out. He had to step out, so he didn't see the Beetlejuice. So they bring out, Tim Burton comes out on stage, Michael Keaton comes out, Willem Dafoe, Justin Theroux, Catherine O'Hara,
wow,
and Monica Bellucci comes out on stage. Who I didn't know Monica Bellucci was, by the way, in her 50s now,
oh,
still one of the sexiest ridiculous women in the world.
You've got to be kidding me. There's no way.
Yeah, I mean, it's nuts. So they all come out on stage. Now, I'm not a huge Beetlejuice fan. I mean, I like the original Beetlejuice, like everybody. I like it, but it's not, to me, it's not one of the all-time classics. So I admit I've not really understood all the nostalgia and excitement a lot of people have had about them coming back to do Beetlejuice again. But this presentation, because they spend a good 15, 20 minutes on this movie between the interviews with everybody on stage, yeah, and then this huge sizzle they showed us. But Michael Keaton coming out saying he said, I'm not joking, this is the most fun I've ever had making a movie. He said, without Catherine O'Hara, there is no sequel. All this kind of stuff. And them just all talking about it in the world. And the sizzle of the show is because they released a trailer a couple weeks ago, right? I didn't think it was.
It was a teaser.
It was a teaser. To me, it was nothing special, whatever. But this like 10-minute sizzle they showed us.
Yeah, someone's like, Willem Dafoe's in it?
Willem Dafoe's in it.
Oh, yeah.
And this, now I'm looking forward to this movie. Mm-hmm. Like this thing they showed us was really fun. They even, you know, one of the things Michael Keaton said was they committed to trying to make the movie,
yeah,
as much the same way that they made the original one. So they've got plaster scene monster animations and all this kind of stuff, which I thought that was really novel, like a really neat idea for them to do. But it just looked, and Michael Keaton hasn't lost a step. He still comes across exactly as he's supposed to come across. Listen, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I'm dying to see the new Beetlejuice, but I sit here much more excited to see it now than I was 3 hours ago. And yeah, I thought it was really good. What did you think about the original Beetlejuice?
When it came out, I was pretty young. What year was that? 1988.
88, 89, something like that. Yeah. It's been 35 years.
By the time I saw it, it was a bit scary for me, but I do remember all the visuals and what I'll say, and roughly the story too. And what I'll say is they kind of call all that back, but not in a way that it feels like fan service, at least from what we saw in the footage. This feels like what would they be doing many, many years from now, you know, because Lydia now has a daughter. Evolved. Yeah, exactly. And what are they doing in their lives? And I think that's a great way to pick up the story and not feel like you have to do all the things that the first movie did, but they still kind of call to that in the trailer. You see a lot of those visual elements that are very Tim Burton, Beetlejuice-esque. I don't know if we saw those like horned helmet thing faces that they have.
Where they pull their faces apart.
I know that always scared
me. That scared me too. Don't feel bad.
I think it was in there. But I'm excited for it. I really am. And the fact that, you know, Michael Keaton he honestly multiple times dropped like he loves this version of it and he loved working with this cast and he thinks it's the most funny thing ever.
Aww. Yeah, like he was saying, guys, he said this movie isn't just good. He said, this movie is great. Now, yeah, of course, movie star says their movie is great. Yeah, but he seems so legitimately enthusiastic about it that his enthusiasm was kind of contagious.
Yeah.
So, agreed. Beetlejuice. All right. Then they had one more movie to show us.
I didn't.
What?
Oh, yeah, there is a movie.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. Oh. I'm like, everyone in the chat's waiting for this one.
I'm like, what did I miss? Joker Folie à Deux. So they bring out Todd Phillips, the director, and he comes out and talks about, first of all, to thank all the movie. Because remember, CinemaCon is a convention of movie theater owners. And he came out to thank all the movie theater owners. He goes, you know what? There was a lot of people trying to work against the first Joker, but the movie theaters got right behind the movie and drove the success. So remember, the first Joker made over $1 billion. It's the highest grossing R-rated film of all time. Won Joaquin Phoenix an Academy Award, was nominated for Best Picture. So he came out and just give this big heartfelt thank you to the movie theaters. Because I was in two, I, I would not have guessed it was 5 years ago.
I know.
It does. I feel like, oh yeah, Joker was just out like 3 years ago. No, it was 5 years ago. Anyway.
That's what COVID and strikes do.
Yeah, that's what COVID and strikes do to you. And you talked a lot about COVID, the pandemic, and dual strikes and almost killing movie theaters. But at any rate, so he comes out and he's talking about, he said, you know, I told everybody this is a, the first Joker is just a one-off movie. It's a one-shot. It's a one-shot. But he said, you know, Joaquin and I, when we were on set making the first Joker, we would talk like, if we were to do more, like, where would we go? But he said, you know, that was all just theoretical because the first movie hadn't even come out yet. He goes, well, then the pandemic came and we were talking more. We would get together and chat and talk. And he's like, what would we do and what would you do? And then it got serious enough that we started developing something and then it got right. And they came up with the right script. And I didn't know this, but Todd Phillips was a producer on Bradley Cooper's A Star Is Born.
Yeah.
So he said, that's where I first met and got to work with Lady Gaga a bit. And he said, right there, I knew I wanted to work with her. And so she became the Harley Quinn. And they showed the trailer. Right before they released it online, they showed it to us in the theater. So first of all, it was great to see it on this giant screen, which was great. And at first, the trailer was confusing to me. Because I thought, wait a minute. Does the whole trailer actually take place in this mental prison? And then everything else is just them fantasizing about it?
Yeah.
And I thought, I don't know if I like that.
Yeah.
But then the trailer kept going. It's like, oh no, some of this clearly is them out of the institution.
Right.
And this one shot, to me, is a shot I want a poster of. She's on the opposite side of the glass of him.
Mm-hmm.
And she just takes, I don't know if it's blood or lipstick or whatever, and just makes a smile on the glass. And she goes, I want to see the real you. And he positions his face on the other side of the glass. So it's over, the red smile is over his mouth. And then he makes this grin. And it's like, It gave me chills. It gave me absolute chills. And then when he's like screaming, what the city needs, and like the running through the streets. And I'm like, okay. And you know what? I'm like everybody else. I don't know how the musical aspect is going to fit with this movie. And I'm not going to say that I now feel completely comfortable with it, but this trailer did a lot to ease my worries because it does fit. And that whole thing they set up at the beginning about the role of music, that she said, what was that first line they say in the trailers, like, music helps us mend fractures in our own psyche. We use music to help mend things in ourselves.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, so there's actually like a narrative reason for them to use music and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, for a first teaser, and that's all it is a first teaser. I thought it looked great. I really liked it. What did you think?
I'm wondering if the musical elements are their psychotic episodes. Just a guess.
I like that idea.
Just because, as you were saying at the beginning of the trailer, I was thinking, oh my gosh, is this really all just in their minds or in the jail? This is going to be the whole thing. But then they break out of that in the second half of the trailer. And I just wonder how they will incorporate the musical elements when they're outside of prison. And that could potentially be a way to kind of work through in the same way that, you know, some movies use action sequences or something to kind of tell this, progress the story. Maybe the musical elements will be there too. But they did ask Todd if you would consider this a musical. And he didn't say that it was a musical. I think he just said it's just a part, it's a feature of the film, but it's not necessarily a musical.
It's clearly like in a true musical is where the whole story is told through song, right? Like Les Mis, right? Like Les Miserables. This is not that. This is more like, we were talking about this on the show the other day. It feels more like it's going to be like Moulin Rouge, where the story is told through dialogue, but with a lot of musical numbers to help tell the story. And that's what it feels like this is going to be. It's going to be not so much a musical as a movie with a lot of music in it.
And he emphasized up front, look, Arthur's life, there's so much music incorporated into the way that he views life. And you see that in the first Joker. And so I think they've always talked about, while they thought they were only going to make Joker, now seeing the character evolve in the first movie, him and Joaquin always were talking about creating a second one with that element kind of being prominent as part of the second movie.
So that was Joker. Now, then we thought that's it, right? The Warner Brothers presentation is over, but it wasn't, because they then said, we want to give you just a little sneak peek at some of the things we've got coming in 2025. I'm like, oh, okay.
How dare they?
And the very first thing that comes up on the screen is this super close up of Jack Black.
America's sweetheart.
America's sweetheart, gosh. Jack Black, going, hello, CinemaCon.
He's so lovable.
I'm on set of Minecraft. Redefining. And he holds up this like block.
Little block thing.
Reinventing what the blockbuster is.
I missed it.
I know.
He goes, and we're bringing a whole new level to the craft.
Yeah.
He says, don't worry. The comedy in the movie is much better. And they're so talking about Minecraft. He goes, we got peasants and we got zombies and we got square loaves of bread.
Jack Black was the highlight for me of the presentation last year, because he's just so fun.
He's so fun.
Yeah, and so he kicks off that little
medley. He kicks off, so it was that, and then up on screen came David Cornsweet and the girl who plays Lois Lane.
Brosnan.
With a dog, and they go, we're on
Crypto?
Set.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't Crypto. Definitely wasn't Crypto. Just a little pet dog. And they were on, we're on set of Superman. They look great. They said, obviously, we can't tell you anything. We can tell you that today we've seen at least one person in a cape. so then they talked about that.
And they also were firm that next year's CinemaCon is going to be Superman.
Very Superman heavy.
If John could pre-order his tickets right now, he would.
I would buy my tickets for CinemaCon right now.
Then they toss it over to, I want to say,
Ryan Coogler. Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Maggie Gyllenhaal has a movie called The Bride coming
out. The Frankenstein movie that we just talked about, because the first pictures of Christian Bale just came out as Frankenstein's monster. They didn't show us, it's just her on set in a very badly lit shot. On her phone, just giving a message to everybody.
Most of it was very much like that. Like, they just asked cast to hold a phone and do a recording. But then, Anne Hathaway and Ewan McGregor have a movie.
Yeah, they said, we can't tell you anything about the movie we're doing right now, but it's Anne Hathaway and Ewan McGregor. So it's like, okay, that looks pretty good. Uh-huh. And then Ryan Coogler and Michael B. Jordan come up on screen saying that we are making our fifth movie together. We're not going to tell you anything about it. I think it's a vampire movie.
I just wrote vampire movie because I didn't know.
Yeah, I think it's a vampire movie. I could be wrong about that. But so they came on screen to talk about it a little bit, which is good. But again, out on stage, we had just in the Warner Brothers presentation, we had Kevin Costner, Bong Joon-ho, Robert Pattinson, Chris Hemsworth, Anya Taylor-Joy, Todd Phillips.
Yep.
I mean, it was good. Listen, was it the best CinemaCon panel presentation I've ever seen? No, but it's a really good start to the 2024 CinemaCon. And now, obviously, the one we're really looking forward to, the ones who always bring the house down in the presentations, is Paramount.
Countdown to Paramount, baby.
Paramount. We're excited about that one.
This was very well done.
Very well done.
Very well professional.
As a project manager, I thought they managed time really well. Now, the hosts could work on their presentation skills a little bit. I think they were better last year than they were this year.
A little loosey-goosey.
The stage itself was beautiful this
year. Oh, the staging was beautiful for the presentation. Like five film reels that each had its own projected screen.
And they were just going through all the history of Warner Brothers, all the movies they put out.
And again, just really highlighting and talking about the magic that nothing beats. And if I were to say I had one job, like what I think my main job is to communicate the fact that nothing beats the experience of seeing a movie in a movie theater. Mm-hmm. I don't care how good you think your home theater system is. It's shitty compared to seeing a movie in a real movie theater with an audience, the communal experience of watching a movie. Because listen, like, I think even just watching the trailer of Superman, A Christopher Reeve Story, just being in that room with 4,000 other people at sharing that together, you could feel the emotion in the room. It's such an important part of the movie going experience And that's one of the big things that I love about CinemaCon is it really celebrates the movie theater experience, which nothing replaces.
And two things, like it sounds like Warner Brothers, with that last thing you guys were describing, is locking in everyone's tickets, making sure everyone's prepared for the following year where there is no more strikes, there is no more COVID things. It's full throttle, all go. I want to mention one thing that I've been seeing throughout the all the presentations. It's a very sweet little thing they're doing. It's by NATO. It's little snippets of behind the scenes.
Oh, yes.
And they're showing these little theater owners, people that like are in the business, but it shows it makes you feel close. Agreed. Like a community. Yeah. It's not just a community of people that watch movies, but people that are involved in other forms, how we all can join together. I just think those little snippets we've been showing, they've been showing it. I've been really good.
Yeah, very well done.
Now, tomorrow we have two presentations. We have Lionsgate. That's going to be at 9:30 in the morning. Lionsgate is 9:30 in the morning.
Lionsgate is Abigail. That's one of their
movies. That's one of the movies they've got. Okay. And then I believe Universal is at 4 p.m. I think Universal's at 4 p.m.
Yep.
I think Paramount and Disney are on Thursday.
Correct.
Yes. So we've got two presentations tomorrow. So that's going to be big.
It's going to be a long day.
So guys, right now, Anne and Ray are going to take off and go to this big poolside party.
Hopefully we can take some video footage so we can show you what goes on there.
Oh, yeah, dude. And then we'll show it on the
stream tomorrow. We'll see. I'm going to show you guys my plate of food, at least.
My plate of food.
By pool party, it means I'm going to go stand at the elevator banks that I saw Chris Hemsworth.
And waiting to see if Chris Hemsworth comes back out.
He'll come back down.
Oh, yeah. One note. Chris Hemsworth is here. Probably staying here only because Transformers 1, Paramount, he's the lead voice, Optimus Prime.
I forgot. I'm glad you brought that up because I forgot. One other thing they touched on, and I thought maybe they'll show us something, but they didn't. They just brought up the title on the screen. They talked a little bit about Lord of the Rings, War of the Rohirrim.
Oh, right.
So they brought the title up on the screen, but they didn't show us anything.
No, they said Universal, right?
No. That's another movie that Universal is doing. It's Twisters.
Twisters, yes.
They talked a little bit about Twisters because they're the distributor, but it's a Universal film. So they said, watch the presentation for Twisters tomorrow. That's coming tomorrow. So Anna and Ray are going to split now, go to the party.
See you in a bit.
But I am going to stay. Have fun, baby. I'll see you down there. I am going to stay and take your guys' questions. Now, before we do, we're going to take just a quick moment here and thank a sponsor of the John Campy YouTube channel, the good folks doing great work over at BetterHelp. Guys, we want to thank a sponsor of today's video, BetterHelp. Guys, it's a brand new year, and a lot of people are making New Year's resolutions, you know, things they want to change about themselves. But I've always believed that it's also equally as important to identify the things we're doing well and building on those. And therapy helps you find your strengths so you can ditch the extreme resolutions and make changes that really stick. I've always believed that nothing impacts our daily performance in our jobs, our hobbies, our relationships, like our mental health. And I've also said for a long time that it's about time that we stop just putting emphasis on improving our physical health by getting out to the gym, but also by putting emphasis on improving our mental health as well. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you gotta do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. So guys, celebrate the progress you've already made. Visit betterhelp.com/campia today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Campia. And thank you to our friends at BetterHelp for sponsoring the John Campia YouTube channel. All right, guys, with that down, we're going to finish off our evening by taking your comments that you guys have been sending in via the super chat. So let's go over and do that now. If I can pull it off, I think I can. Let's see. Can we pull it off? Oh my goodness, we can. Okay, so who are we starting off with? We're starting off with Demarius Love. And Demarius Love writes, actually, you know what, guys? Give me one second. Let me see if I can do something here. Do. Give me just 1 minute. Just want to make sure I've got this here. Okay. Yeah, there we go. Okay. So I'm not in our one of our studios. I'm just trying to do this off the fly here. Okay. So we're going to start off with Demarius Love. And Demarius Love writes, again, I'm just having an issue. Give me a second. All will be well. All will be well. Okay, there we go. Demarius Love writes, have you heard about Ryan Coogler's new vampire movie with Michael B. Jordan? We just actually saw them talking about it a little bit. For Warner Brothers, focusing on Southern horror mythology, it sounds awesome. Yeah, Ryan Coogler, Michael B. Jordan were just on screen at the CinemaCon presentation. They didn't give us any details or anything, but I'm very excited about it. The fact that it's their fifth movie, like once you just go all the way back to them, the way their first thing they worked on together, Fruitvale Station. That's really the movie, I think, that put the world on notice that Michael B. Jordan was going to be a force. Then, obviously, they did Black Panther together. Mm. So this is their fifth movie they're working on together, and it sounds like it's going to be great. All right. Let's see. Dane writes, I think Joker 2 never leaves the asylum. It's just in the heads of the Joker and Harley while they dance around the asylum courtyard or something like that. See, I was thinking that a little bit when the Joker trailer first started, like the first 30 seconds, that's the impression it gives, that it all takes place in the asylum and everything else is just in their imaginations and their heads. But as the trailer progressed, they showed a lot of stuff that I think clearly does show that at some point they do leave the asylum and things get crazy from there. At least that's what I think. We'll find out if we're right or not. All right, next up, we got Hayden Center, who writes, thank you all for being such an inspiration to me. Oh, thank you so much. John, I hit 264 subs. I hope I can meet you all someday. Well, good on you, and thank you for joining us, man. I appreciate that. All right, Dwayne Fernandez writes, hey, John, I saw the Hollywood Reporter article saying Francis Ford Coppola's movie is having trouble finding a distributor. If they don't find one, does this mean we won't get to see it? So I've been reading some things that are not very good about Francis Ford Coppola's new movie, Megalopolis. Some saying it's not going to be able to find an audience. Some saying it's too convoluted for its own good. Some say it's just too weird for weird's sake. And yeah, apparently distributors are not lining up to acquire this film. So if no distributors sign up for it to take it, what will probably happen is that they will probably then just release it on streaming. At some point, it will get, I'm going to try to make my camera, like I said, I'm not in studio, guys, so it's a little difficult here to do this right. But obviously the main goal for them is to get this thing in a movie theater, right? That's their goal. They want this thing to be seen in theaters. That's what they want to do. They want this thing to be seen in theaters. And that's what they're going to try to do. They're going to try to get theatrical distribution. But one of the things I read that it was that one analyst said, no distributor's going to buy this because they're never going to make their money back if they do. But if for whatever reason they can't get this thing in theaters, it will probably then wind up on streaming. So I think we're going to get to see it regardless. One way or the other, we're going to get to see it, even if it just ends up on a streaming thing. But again, I haven't seen it myself, so I can't say it's good or not good. I'm just saying everything we're hearing about so far is that it's not great. Like, I'm not hearing that it's Batgirl level horrible, just that it's not good. And they're having some trouble getting somebody to pick it up. I hope things turn around for it, though. All right. That was Dwayne. Thanks, Dwayne. Next up, we've got James Wheeler, who sends in a $50 super chat. James, thank you so much for supporting us on that level, man. We appreciate that. And James writes, hey, John, Ray and Ann went down to the party. I know I have said this before, but as a person with autism, I want to thank you for all you do every day. Your show really keeps me centered. Aw, James, thank you so much, man. That's incredibly kind of you to say. Thank you for being a part of our community. You don't have to send in a $50 super chat, man, to do that. But I appreciate you supporting us very, very much. But we appreciate you being here, and we're glad we can be here and our show can be that for you, man. I really appreciate that. All right. Next up, we've got Wesley Cunningham, who writes, "This Ryan Coogler project has me hyped. Coogler's style with Southern vampire hoarder sounds terrifying. Plus, the cast is looking awesome. Listen, can you imagine Michael B. Jordan in a Southern horror style vampire movie? Come on, tell me that doesn't give you some kind of chills. That's got to give you some kind of chills. I think, it just sounds so promising. And listen, Coogler and Michael B. Jordan always make magic together. So I'm really excited to see what they do next. All right, next up, Dino Vader writes, "Episode 8 of Shogun, I can't believe what I saw." I haven't seen it yet because I'm here. But I know what I'm doing later tonight. I'm going to be loading up. I'm going to be grabbing this laptop and I'm going to be loading up Shogun. Jaw dropping. My eyes were watering. My body was shaking. Well, again, I haven't seen it, so I can't comment on it. All right. But thank you for giving me the heads up and the reminder, Dino. I appreciate that. Wesley Cunningham writes, "Current gauge on Furiosa after the presentation, probably my most anticipated Warner Brothers thing, even more than Joker. Fury Road was my shit." I got to tell you, the Furiosa presentation we saw tonight really upped my anticipation level for it. Think about Mad Max Fury Road and the level of that visceral, heart-thumping scenery and action and like the choreography of violence that's going on with the cars and all that kind of stuff. Take that and double it. That's what they did. Now, whether doubling it is going to make the movie better or not, who knows? We won't know until we see the movie. But I'll tell you, that stuff they showed us was awesome. The Furiosa presentation was fantastic. It wasn't like 20 minutes of footage like I was hoping, but that 10-minute sizzle they showed us was just stunning. Absolutely stunning. I really liked what I saw. All right. Thanks for that, Wesley. Next up, we got John Redcorn, who writes, "Big Willie just slapped the crow from June 7th to August 23rd. Do you think it was because the studio has no faith in it? That's not a great date." Here's the thing, John. I'll say this. I believe we no longer live in an age where there are good release dates and bad release dates. I mean, granted, Christmas is still the biggest movie going time of the year, so obviously that's a good one. You know, there are certain summer dates that's a really good for movie going time. But honestly, it's not, I feel like it's not like it was 7 or 8 years ago where, remember, like February was considered the graveyard release date where that's where studios and distributors sent movies to die. Now you've got really good movies coming out in February. Like literally we can have great movies now coming out any time of the year. Any time of the year. So I just don't know. I don't believe there are good times and bad times to release movies anymore. I think it's just pick your best spot. And there are a couple that are better than others. Prime summer season, Christmas season. But other than that, everything else, I think every other release date today is now viable. I really do. So I don't think the moving of the release dates signify. The answer is this. I don't personally think the moving of the release dates signifies anything. Now, both of those movies may be good. Both of them may be bad. But I don't think the release dates give us any insight into the goodness or badness of either. But that's just my thought at any rate. Good question, though. All right. Next up, our friend Murray Reich writes, "Will you be seeing Civil War in Vegas? I'm so curious to hear your thoughts." I will not be seeing Civil War in Vegas. Because there is just too much going on at CinemaCon. I literally don't have an evening where I can get up and go leave Caesars for 3 or 4 hours. I just don't have that. So I'm going to have to try to see it this weekend once I get home. Because I'm hearing such good things about it. Like insanely good things, like movie of the year kind of things about it. that I'm really stoked. But unfortunately, no. But as soon as I see it, I will give you guys my thoughts on it 100%, Murray. All right. Next up, we got Sam Fisher, who writes, it's really interesting that for Joker 2, they seem to have gone the route of Harley being another patient and not one of his doctors. Well, yeah, I mean, but that kind of makes sense, right? Because, look, I know a lot of people, me included, were kind of expecting that Harleen Quinzel, Dr. Harleen Quinzel, was going to be one of Joker's therapists. And then she falls under his spell and becomes Harley Quinn. But the first Joker is such a departure from the traditional Joker mythology. Not that there is a traditional Joker mythology, but the first Joker movie is such a departure from our commonly understood version of Joker that it's not really surprising to me that they would also have such a departure for Harley Quinn. And like, who knows? Maybe Harleen was a psychiatrist herself at one point and then went mad and is now in the institution. Who knows? But again, the first Joker was such a departure. I don't think we should be surprised that they're also departing from the idea that Harleen was his therapist at one point. But who knows? I mean, it was just the first teaser. Maybe there is more to it than what we're seeing. So we'll find out. All right. Thanks for that, Sam. Next up, Al writes, which is your most anticipated of these films? Well, I won't count Superman because they didn't really preview Superman. That's next year. I never would have thought I'd say this. It's the documentary. It's Superman, the Christopher Reeve story. I mean, I loved what I saw from Furiosa. I really liked what I saw from Trap and what I saw from The Watchers and what I saw for Beetlejuice and what I saw for Horizon. I liked a lot of it. Some of it I loved, but after tonight, I think the thing they've got coming that I'm most excited to see is probably that Christopher Reeve documentary. It just looks so good. All right. Thanks for that, Al. Next up, Devin Lida writes, Ray Ora is the man. He is the man. I wish he was here to hear you say that, but he is. Isaac Martinez writes, just saw Monkey Man, really good. I liked Monkey Man. I did. I had a good time with it. I thought the action was incredible. For those of you who didn't hear me talk about, though, I didn't think it was great. Like, I thought it was good. Thumbs up from me, but I didn't think it was great. When the movie, and everybody's comparing it to John Wick, it's really more like Kill Bill. It's more Kill Bill in its DNA than it is John Wick in its DNA. That being said, when the movie is about a personal vengeance story, it's awesome. When it gets into the larger saving the nation political ramifications, it kind of loses its pace a little bit for me. But at any rate, like, again, I like the movie. I thought Dev Patel did a great job for his first time directing. I thought his performance in the movie was great. Can't wait to see what he does next. All right. Casey Mack writes, from what I've seen, probably didn't mean to put the A in there. From what I've heard of Mickey 17, it sounds so interesting. With Focus's features tomorrow, will they something for Nosferatu? Yeah, so Focus Features and Lionsgate are doing their presentation together tomorrow. What they will or will not show, I'm not sure. But since Nosferatu is already filming, it's the new Robert Eggers film. My guess is they'll show us something. I mean, I don't know for sure, but my guess is they will. We will certainly let you know once we know, Casey. All right. Haunted Autumn writes, love the Joker 2 trailer. Gaga looks amazing. That last shot, I thought it was great how they kept the same vibe as the OG trailer for Joker 1, Bring on the Filthy. You know what? Here's the interesting thing. Todd Phillips, he came out and said, we wanted to make this movie not as a traditional sequel. We wanted it to be its own movie, you know? And we wanted to have its own feel. And I'm sure they do, but you're 100% right, Haunted. The trailer feels like that first Joker movie. And that's a good thing to me. That's a good thing. It has that same tone, that same texture, that same feel. And that is a good thing to me. It made me more excited for it. And we'll see how different the movie it actually is. All right. Next up, we got Daniel Vasquez, who writes, "Greetings from the party. I love Joker 2 trailer. So far, Joker still lives in a society like the first film. Let's hope Todd Phillips doesn't trick us because he forgot and pull a Hangover 2 on us." Yeah, it's so funny. When Todd Phillips came out on stage, the first thing I said, I leaned over to Anne, I said, it's so crazy to think that this guy who made the Joker is the same guy who made the Hangover. Hangover 2, let's not talk about. But the Hangover is one of the great comedies of the last 20, 25 years. I mean, it truly is one of the great comedies the last 20, 25 years. And I say that as I am in Caesar's Palace. It's absolutely fantastic. And listen, what gives me my most optimism for Joker 2 is Joaquin Phoenix. Not that a great actor will make a bad movie a good movie. Actors can't do that. But Joaquin Phoenix has never done a sequel. Joaquin Phoenix was not under a multi-film deal with Joker. He did not have to do the sequel. And Joaquin Phoenix heard the pitch for it, looked at the script they had, and said, yes, I want to do this. That is what gives me my optimism for this film. And so maybe it'll be good, maybe it'll be bad, but I'm going to go in optimistic. I believe they're going to do good things with it. All right, next up. Pirate King Nate writes, "Hey, John, AMC's Unseen Screen showed the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. That's great. It was really good. Henry's good. Alan is awesome. I really enjoyed his character." You know what? I love hearing that, because when AMC announced that they were doing the Screen Unseen, that's like a secret screening, right? You buy your ticket. I think it's on a Monday. You buy a ticket to come to the theater on a Monday, but you don't know what movie you're going to see, right? It's like a $5 ticket, but they don't tell you what movie it's going to be. But they always show these like movies nobody's talking about and nobody's excited about. And that's fine once in a while, but you got to pepper in some movies that people are kind of looking forward to build the suspense and surprise to get a Screen Unseen ticket. I love hearing that it was the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. And I'm super excited for this movie. But I haven't heard anybody talk about it. I'm glad you liked it, man. Thanks for giving me that heads up. That's very, very cool. Now I might go to another AMC Screen Unseen, knowing that they might show a movie like that. All right. Next up, Amin writes, "I love the vibe and style of the Joker trailer. Me too. I'm all for them trying something new with the musical aspect. This film could be something special." Listen, film is art, and I never object to filmmakers trying to do something artistically different in their films. Like, even remember that Jennifer Lawrence, Javier Bardem garbage movie, Mother? Remember that? It's a great director. I'm forgetting who was the director of it. I just remember it was a great director. Guys in the live chat, who was the director of Mother? Anyway. I know there's like a 15 second delay between when I talk and when you guys hear me. So I'll keep my eye open for who is the director. It wasn't, was it Soderbergh? I can't remember. Hey, Darren Aronofsky, that's who it was. Marcello was the first one to put it. Darren Aronofsky. Okay, so here's the thing though. While I thought Mother was a horrible disaster mess of a movie, Darren Aronofsky was going for something very artistically different. And here's the thing. When you take risks and you take chances, it could go bad, right? But I never want our filmmakers, particularly our great filmmakers like Darren Aronofsky, to stop taking risks, right? Yeah, he made Mother. It ended up being a big mess. But oh my God, when you watch that movie, maybe you like it, maybe you don't. But you really feel like an artist made this movie, right? You really feel that an artist made this movie and really took big chances and big swings. But when we ask our filmmakers to take big swings, we gotta allow them to fail sometimes, because taking big swings means you're gonna strike out a lot. Sometimes you'll hit home runs and sometimes you'll strike out a lot. That's the consequences of taking big swings, right? And I never want Darren Aronofsky to do anything different. I want him to keep taking big swings. So I may have hated the movie, but I love that he tried it. I do. I love that he tried it. And so bringing that over to Joker 2, I want Todd Phillips and Joaquin Phoenix, I want them to swing big. I want them to get creative. I want them to do something artistically challenging, because maybe they'll strike out, but maybe they'll hit a crushing home run. And I always want our artists to have that freedom, to have the freedom to swing and miss. And where we as film fans, and I know I'm preaching here a bit, forgive me, but where we as film fans have to get is to a place that we allow our filmmakers, because we say, right, as film fans, we say we want filmmakers to take risks. No, we don't. Because when a filmmaker takes a risk and it doesn't work out, movie fans today are assholes. I mean, we really are. Because somebody does like a movie that doesn't work, and all of a sudden everybody's, oh, I don't want them to go anywhere near another movie again. Right? We ask our filmmakers to be artistic, to take chances, to take risks, to swing big. But we don't want to allow them the grace that, hey, you might miss and strike out once in a while. It seems like a great example of this is the assholery we saw surrounding Rian Johnson when he made The Last Jedi. Listen, for a lot of people, The Last Jedi just didn't work. Okay. But the way people try to change the narrative, like, oh, he's never been a good director. You are fucking insane. Rian Johnson is a brilliant filmmaker, period. End of sentence. And you thought so too until he made a movie you didn't like. And then all of a sudden, Rian Johnson sucks. I don't want Rian Johnson near any of the movies I want to see made, and blah, 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 blah. Assholery. Assholery at its peak, right? We want directors to take swings. But if they do, and they take chances and they try to think outside the box and they try to do something different, like Darren Aronofsky did with Mother, then we've got to, as fans, say, you're allowed to swing and miss. If you swing and miss, we're not going to turn on you for taking the swing. We wanted you to take the swing. We asked you to take a swing. And if it didn't work, okay, it didn't work. Let's move on to the next movie, right? So, like, I could have been one of those people. We could be one of those people where we see Mother. I think, man, I thought Mother sucked. Well, I never want to see Darren Aronofsky direct again. No, I very much do, because I love that Aronofsky took a big swing. Even if it didn't work, I love that he took a big swing. And we're seeing that with Taika Waititi right now, right? Like, Taika Waititi, he makes this string of unbelievably fantastic stuff from Wilder People and What We Do in the Shadows and Thor Ragnarok and what he did on Mandalorian was great. But then he made Thor Love and Thunder, which, let's admit, wasn't any of our favorite. And all of a sudden, everybody hates Taika Waititi. It's like, holy shit, film fans, we can be stupid. And I'm including myself in this, by the way. I'm not pointing my fingers at anybody. We're all like this. Film fans can be really stupid and we can have really big assholery sometimes. If we're going to ask our filmmakers to take big swings, then we've got to allow our filmmakers to take big swings and strike out, because that's what we're asking them to do. Anyway, that's that. Sorry, I went off on a bit of a rant there. All right, next up, we got Sean Stewart, who writes, I like the Joker 2 trailer, but worried that Gaga is another Zazie Beetz role, just with more screen time and singing. You know what? That's a very valid thing to bring up, right? Because while that was a great twist in the first Joker movie, that all this stuff with Zazie Beetz was all in his imagination, or at least a lot of it was, I don't think they're going to go to the well on that again, though, with Joker 2. I don't think they're going to do that with Joker 2. I think this is going to be a literal character. They will both have fantasy elements for sure, but they already did it with Zazie Beetz. I think you're very, very observant to bring that up as a concern. I would say, though, that they already did that in the last movie, so I don't think they'll do it again. At least I hope they don't. It worked in the first movie, but why just repeat it? I think it wouldn't be beneficial to the film if they did. All right. Nicholas Grimey writes, did I miss the Joker 2 discussion? Just saw the trailer and it looks amazing. Gaga and Phoenix look amazing. They do look amazing. And no, we, because they saved the Joker thing for the end of the presentation, we talked about it last. So nope, I don't think you miss it. And yeah, I agree. I think it looks really good. And remember, it's just a first teaser. We'll get more as we get closer to the movie and we see like trailer number 2 and trailer number 3. Alex Von Gollum writes, have you seen Shogun's new episode? It's spectacular. Nope, not yet. I'm here at CinemaCon doing, I was just at the presentation and now I'm doing this live stream. So I will watch it later tonight and I'm very excited. Thanks for reminding me though, Alex. All right, next up. Soul, my buddy, Soul Video writes, can Anne stay out till 3 a.m. tonight? No, my buddy Soul, who you guys, I've had on my show a couple of times, Soul Video, AKA Johnny Green. He's actually out visiting family in Cleveland right now. So yeah. So thank you for what, God, what time is it in Cleveland? It's like 10:30 in Cleveland, isn't it? Well, thank you to Sol and we'll see you when you get back. He was just at Anne's birthday party the other day. All right. Moda Awesome writes, Deadpool 3 got some serious competition after this. That lipstick transition in the end though, that I'll tell you what I said during, for those of us, those of you joining a little bit late, I said a little bit earlier that I want a poster of that. When she does the smile on the glass, she goes, I want to see the real you. And he moves his face behind the lipstick smile. And then, oh my God, that is such great imagery. Such great imagery. I totally want a poster of that, Moda Awesome. All right. Andy Peertz just sends in a super chat just a support badge to be supportive. Thank you so much for that, Andy. Appreciate that very much, man. Moda Awesome also writes, talking about Joker 2, by the way. Yep, no, that you made that clear. You made that clear. And yes, that shot was awesome, Moda Awesome. All right. Daniel Vakura writes, Mickey 17's biggest problem is that it releases in January next year where it should be later. Sorry. Where it should be later to have a better shot at awards. I really don't understand that decision. I'm definitely excited for it. You know how a little bit earlier I said that I just don't believe we live in a time anymore where there are bad release dates. I think over the past 5, 6, 7 years, the business and the industry and audience viewing habits have evolved to the point where any month is a valid month for releasing movies and stuff like that. I also don't believe anymore the idea that if you release your movie earlier in the year, you're lowering your chances for Oscar attention. I just don't think that's true anymore. I don't think that's true. As a matter of fact, let me just go over for a second and look up what was Barbie's release date. Yeah, Barbie came out in July, right? So July, August, September, October, November, December, January, February, March, April. I mean, that was 9 months before the Oscars, right? Or March, like eight months before the Oscars. Didn't matter. Oppenheimer came out 8 months before the Oscars. Didn't matter. I think there was a time when that may have been true, that like releasing earlier the year, but I don't think that's true anymore. I really don't. I think if you put out a movie that is Oscar worthy and all that kind of stuff, it'll get nominated. Like it used to be that if you had a movie that you thought had a shot at Oscars, you had to release it in November or December, like as close to the Oscars. They actually called that Oscar season, right? But that isn't true anymore. So I really don't think that's going to be a problem for them. I really don't. So, I mean, I might be wrong about that, Daniel, but I really don't think that's going to be a problem for them anymore. All right, next up. Let's see. Our final question of the night comes to us from Alex Von Gollum, who writes, oh, he only got one in. So one of two. The cinematography of the dance scenes for Joker 2's trailer with the blue hues is gorgeous. It really is. Looks like a Best Picture contender. Looks like Joaquin. And unfortunately, didn't get a chance to get the second one in. Yes. Look, and why not believe that Joker 2 has a legitimate shot of getting a Best Picture nomination? Why not? The first movie got nominated for Best Picture. The first movie had its star, the leading man, Joaquin Phoenix, win the Academy Award for Best Lead Actor. Why not believe that the potential is there for it to win or be nominated or to score a nomination again? I think it's absolutely positive. I think that's completely positively a possibility for them. All right, guys. And that'll do it tonight for our wrap-up roundup report of the Warner Brothers CinemaCon presentation. It was a wonderful presentation. Furiosa, Horizon 1 and 2, Trap, The Watchers, Joker 2, Superman, the Christopher Reeve story. Just such a great lineup. And then little sneak peeks of like Minecraft and seeing David Cornsweet and Brosnan on screen together as Clark and Lois. I mean, a really good, solid presentation for the first presentation of CinemaCon. Again, tomorrow we've got two. We've got Lionsgate and Focus Features doing one together, and we've got Universals. Now, we are going to do just one stream tomorrow that will sum up the Lionsgate and the Universal ones together. So, because the afternoon schedule is pretty tight for us to try to do two. So, yeah. So make sure you come back and join us for that. And I'm going to go watch Shogun. And well, first I'm going to go join Ray and Ann at the party. And then I'm going to go watch Shogun and get up tomorrow morning for a 9:30 Lionsgate presentation. Can't wait, guys. Thank you so much for joining me here and tagging along with us as we come here to CinemaCon. Actually, I'm going to see if I can show you beautiful. Give me one second here. I'm going to see if I can do this. I'm not sure if I can. We actually got a really good view. I'm going to see if I can do this. Really good view from our room here. I'm going to point the camera outside. Well, there's Planet Hollywood and it got a bunch of the strip out there. It's hard to see with the lights inside, but yeah, we got a nice little room here and a great view from the room. And thank you for joining us as we've been here. We will be back again tomorrow. We'll see you guys then. So that'll do it for me, guys. Thanks a lot for being here. My name's John Campia, and until tomorrow, my friends, bye-bye.